Welcome back to the program. Amidst today's healthcare debate, we hear phrases constantly, such as insurance exchanges, public option mandates, and many more phrases surprisingly unique to American medicine and American insurance. What we don't hear are phrases like best practices and universal coverage and questions about what other nations are doing. In fact, the U.S. ranks 37th in the World Health Organization rankings, yet no one is asking what countries 1 through 36 are doing. Why, in a scientific enterprise such as medicine, where we should be tied to evidence-based practices, we're ignoring the entire world? Why are we so myopic in our view? Is it really the power of insurance companies? What role do doctors play? Or does it simply reflect the limited ken of our leaders? All of this is material in our guest T.R. Reid's new book, The Healing of America. T.R. Reid is a longtime correspondent for The Washington Post, a former chief of its Tokyo and London bureaus, as well as a commentator for National Public Radio. It is my pleasure to have T.R. Reid here to discuss The Healing of America, a global quest for better, cheaper, and fairer health care. Tom Reid, thanks so much for joining us.
Jeff, it's great to be back on your air. Thank you.
Good to have you here. Part of this is set against, we should talk about the quest that you went on, not only to find out about what's going on in healthcare around the world, but to tie it to something personal that you were dealing with, which was a bum shoulder.
Exactly. I set off to do this because, you know, all the other industrialized free market democracies, countries like us, manage to provide health care for everybody of good quality, and they spend half as much as we do in the process. So I set out to figure out how do they do this, and I went to the doctor in rich democracies around the world, and since I was going to doctors and hospitals anyway, I took my bum shoulder along with me and asked them what they could do. So I try to kill two birds with one book.
Does it surprise you, having gone on this adventure of your own and really done this research, that in the debate that we're having today, that there is absolutely no talk of what's going on in terms of best practices anywhere else in the world?
Yeah, well, of course, that's the whole thesis of my book, that we could learn from the other countries. There's a lot to learn there, and, well, okay, so what do you think, Jeff? Do you think Americans are willing to learn from the French anything? I don't know. The fact is, if you look around, a lot of the stuff that is absolutely fundamental to American life are ideas we got from overseas, the interstate highway system, public broadcasting, text messaging, yoga, sushi, pizza, even American Idol we borrowed from the Brits. So why not borrow some ideas about healthcare?
Right. And of course, we are spending, although we rank 37th in the World Health Organization rankings, we are spending more per GDP than any other nation on the planet.
Yeah, exactly, by a large margin, and we still leave tens of millions of people uncovered. And so I thought my job was to go around the world and figure out how do they do that? How come they can do better and do it cheaper? And you know what? It turned out an equally important question was, why do they do it? Why does a country commit to provide health care to everybody who needs it? If you think about that one for a couple minutes, Jeff, you start to realize the biggest question is, how come the world's richest country has never committed to provide health care to everybody?
And, of course, what you talk about is this notion of a moral imperative.
Yeah. All the other countries started out by making the moral decision, hey, we're a rich society, and in our society, we think everybody who's sick should have access to a doctor. And once you make that ethical commitment, it's a moral commitment, then you can design a system to get there. And I think our debate this summer, I've been disappointed because we keep losing sight of the goal, which I think ought to be universal coverage at a reasonable cost, because we're so hung up on the mechanics, you know, insurance company reimbursement levels and hospital company profits, and we keep forgetting that the real goal is to get everybody covered.
And why do you think that is? Why do we lose sight of that moral imperative?
You know why? I think it's on purpose. I think, you know, there's $2.4 trillion sloshing around our health insurance business, our health company, health business, and, you know, there are hundreds of companies that make more than $1 billion a year out of our current system. There are a lot of winners in our current system. And so they, of course, are going to fight change. And one way they do it is they know that Americans would not be happy knowing that tens of thousands of our fellow Americans die every year of treatable diseases because they can't see a doctor. So they keep changing the subject. And, getting into the nitty-gritty of insurance company performance and the like. And we always, it's happened every time we've tried to do this in America, we lose track of the real goal.
And one of the things that we hear so often in this debate, particularly from the insurance companies and from those opposed to it, is this idea that if we look around the world at all these other systems, it's all socialized medicine. In fact, that's the furthest thing from the truth.
Yeah, exactly right. It is not all socialized medicine out there. That was one of the most striking discoveries of my tour. Some countries do have the government provide the care. Government owns the hospitals, government employs the doctors, and government pays the bills. Britain, Spain, Italy are like that. I'd call that socialized medicine. Some countries, like Canada and Australia, the docs are private, the hospitals are private, but the insurance scheme is government. What do you call that, half-socialized? But a lot of countries, Germany, France, Netherlands, Switzerland, Belgium, Japan, big, rich, industrialized democracies, cover everybody with private docs, private hospitals, and private insurance. And when I realized that, I came away pretty optimistic, because that's basically the American model. But they've made it work. We've never made it work, but it could work, because it does in other countries.
Talk a little bit about the French system, because in some ways it's the closest to what should be the ideal for us.
Yeah, in France, everybody's covered. The docs are private, the hospitals are private, and they have 14 insurance companies that are private, largely private. They cover everybody. They spend about half as much as we do. And get this, when you go to the doctor in France, on the wall, she is required by law to list the price for all of the procedures she does. She lists the price. The next column tells you how much insurance is going to pay you back. And the next column tells you how long it's going to take the insurance company to pay you. It's usually 3 or 4 days in France. So I was in France, and a guy was complaining to me that, man, the insurance company really stinks because they haven't paid the bill, and it's been almost 2 weeks. You know, I mean, come on, that would be a paradise in America. So what they've done is, and this is true in all the countries that use private insurance, they have private insurance companies, but they have strict regulation of them in a way that we've never regulated our insurance companies. So they have to cover everybody. They have to pay every claim. They can't deny a claim. They usually have to pay the claim within a matter of days. Get this, Jeff. In Switzerland, if the insurance company doesn't pay your claim in 5 days, next month's premium is free. You know, that's good health insurance. And those countries limit their administrative costs. In American for-profit health insurance, administrative costs run about 20%. In France, I never thought of France as a model of management efficiency, but French insurance companies have administrative costs of 4%, one-fifth as much. So those other countries have made health insurance work better, is what they've done.
How have the French managed to do it with such a small administrative cost?
Here's what they do. There's no paper in the French system. You go to a French hospital or a French doctor's office, and what's missing are the file cabinets full of patients' records. They don't have any, and there's no billing office. You know why? Because everybody in France, 61 million people, has a little green credit card, and it has your medical record on it. You go into the doctor's office, and he puts your card in a reader, and your entire medical record shows up on the screen, and the doc talks to you and prescribes something and suggests something and types all that into the card, and then the doc hits one key on the computer, the whole record goes to the insurance company, and you'll be paid in 3 days. It's just a vastly more efficient and smarter system than we've got.
Talk a little bit about the Japanese system.
Yeah, Japan is astonishing. It's the oldest population in the world and the healthiest, and those two shouldn't go together. Japan has fabulous health results. They live longer and healthier than anybody else. They have better recovery rates from every major disease than Americans do. They go to the doctor all the time. It's just culturally fun or pleasant to go to the doctor. They go 15 times a year on average. We go about 5. In Japan, when a woman has a baby, the mom and the baby stay in the hospital for 10 days after the birth. And yet, the Japanese spend about $3,400 per person on health care per year, and we spend $7,000.
talk a little bit about this cost structure that you mentioned before. One of the things about the American system, as I think most people that have been part of it know, is that the cost is a great mystery in the American system.
That's amazing. Yeah, if you go to your doctor or hospital for any major procedure in America and ask them what it's going to cost, the answer is, I don't know. It depends on your plan. I'm on the board of a medical school in Colorado, and at our hospital, you know, there's some procedures we do 30 times a week, and we get 30 different prices for them, and we have to fill out 30 different forms for 30 different plans. Nobody else does it that way. In all the other countries, everybody's covered in the same system, so there's one set of forms, one set of rules, and quite often one set of prices for the same procedure for the whole country. What you get out of that is you get vastly simpler and cheaper administration. The other countries think that's fairer. They think it's just fairer if everybody has the same access to the same care at the same price.
Mm-hmm. Talk about the British and the Canadian systems, the systems that we constantly hear as representing all that's bad about socialized medicine.
Yeah, well, and Britain is socialized medicine. In Britain, government owns the hospital. Government employs a lot, not all, but a lot of the doctors, and government pays all the bills. You know what? When I was there, it really worked. You know, if we had a family of five Americans in London. Your kid gets sick, you call the doctor, 2 hours later she comes to your house. They make house calls in Britain. She treats your child, you know, gives her a shot of penicillin or whatever. And then guess what happens, Jeff? The doctor walks out the door. No bill, no copay, no deductible, no premium, no nothing. Because in that system, the rule is you never get a doctor bill in your entire life. Medical care is government's job. You pay through taxes. But since you're paying zero monthly health insurance premium, the Brits actually spend less on health care than average American does. I thought the care was pretty good. When we got there in the late 90s, there were still long waiting lists, but Tony Blair and Gordon Brown poured a lot of money into their system, so there's shorter waiting lists. Canada is a different model. In Canada, the docs and hospitals are private, but the payment scheme is the insurance is run by government. In that system, in Canada, look, if you're sick, they treat you promptly and for free. But if what you have is a limp or a pain or your back hurts or your shoulder hurts, as in my case, you wait. And they keep people waiting for months. In my case, to see an orthopedic surgeon would have taken 10 months. And they did that on purpose to save money. So when you hear about these long waiting lists, guess what? In Canada, it's true. It's not true if you have an acute problem. They treat you free. But if you're hurting, if your back hurts, or if you're limping, or you need a new hip, man, you wait.
Mm-hmm. Talk a little bit about outcomes and relate it to your own personal experience with your shoulder and the different approaches that were prescribed in different places.
Yeah, it is interesting the way cultural values have an impact on the medical treatment. In America, you know, we love high tech. We use aggressive medicine. So when I took my shoulder into a very, very good American orthopedic surgeon, he immediately said, well, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to cut out your shoulder and put in this piece of titanium. It'll work great. How much will it cost? Well, he had no idea. Doctors don't know, but it would have been about $47,000. In other countries, some countries were willing to give me the artificial shoulder, but in most cases they said, no, it doesn't have to be that drastic. We can do monthly shots of cortisone for the pain. We can do physical therapy. In Japan, the insurance plan covered acupuncture and traditional Chinese medicine. And I went to India because I was trying to look at some third world countries, some developing countries, to see what they do for healthcare. And in India, they gave me herbal massage. They massaged me with warm oil, which not only felt great, but I actually got more movement in my shoulder out of it. Mm-hmm. So there were various approaches. The U.S. was the most aggressive and the most high-tech and therefore the most expensive. As it turned out, I came home from my world tour with less pain and more movement in my shoulder, so that was a success. And I came home convinced that we could cover everybody because all the other countries do.
How did doctors and administrators in these other countries look upon the American system?
Everybody dumps on the American system. You know how in America the bad word is socialized medicine? Oh, God, that's the last thing we want is socialized medicine. In the rest of the world, the bad word is American-style medicine. And everybody knows. They think we're ruthless. They think we're just cruel. Everybody I talk to, certainly every doctor and health minister, knows that we leave tens of millions of people outside the system without insurance. They can't understand why we do it, but they all know it. I think in the rest of the world, they feel a smug superiority. And, you know, when I lived in Britain, they had the Prime Minister's questions once a week where the opposition parties bashed the Prime Minister. And a very common line of attack would be, oh, the National Health Service, the lines are long, and my constituent had to wait 3 weeks to be treated, blah, blah, blah. And the answer from Tony Blair always was, well, we're working on our problems, but I tell you, at least we're not as bad as American for-profit corporate medicine. We'd never want to be like that.
Mm-hmm. Talk a little bit about the American system and why, in all the conversations you had, and even, I guess, members of Congress or a documentary that you were involved with dealing with this, that there is no willingness to look at these other systems.
That I can't figure out. Max Baucus, you know, the chairman of the Senate Finance Committee, who I think is a good guy, he says he wants a uniquely American solution to our health care problem. Well, and what I said to him is, well, I'll tell you what we have now is definitely un-American. The notion that we're supposed to be happy, I have good insurance, so the heck with my neighbor, and who cares if tens of millions of my fellow Americans are left out of the system, that's not American to me. That's un-American to ignore your neighbor's problems. We should be pulling together. We're all in the same boat here. So, why? It's partly ideological, as President Obama says all the time. For some reason, people think everything overseas is big government nanny state. That's wrong. And people think if we tried to do the kind of things that other countries do, that would lead to big government. No, it's not true. As I said in the book, I mean, a lot of countries in Germany, they're less socialized than the United States. They do have private insurance, but they regulate the insurance. They put limitations on that insurance, and those would help here. If we had those kind of regulations for our health insurance companies, our system would be much better.
I mean, we do have national systems when you look at, as you point out, both Medicare and the veteran system.
Absolutely. You know, and the interesting thing is, when Americans get government medicine, they really like it. The VA and Medicare have much higher rates of satisfaction than the private health insurance system. In fact, you know, earlier this year, President Obama suggested that veterans rely more on private insurance, and they went crazy. Oh, are you kidding me? Not a chance. That idea died in about one day because they're very happy with government-run medicine. And, of course, the striking thing is a lot of the people who were shouting the loudest at these town meetings this summer, but we don't want government medicine, are people who are on Medicare.
Mm-hmm. What is the German system like? In many ways, it's a hybrid of a lot of the things we've been talking about.
I think the German system works pretty well. It's private doctors, private hospitals, and private insurance. You get insurance through your employer, and you split the premium with the employer. It works better in many ways. For example, anybody in Germany can buy any of 220 different insurance plans. If you don't like your insurance, you can drop it on 60 days' notice and sign up for a new plan, and the new guy can't raise your rate. So that's more choice than any American has for an insurance plan. They cover everybody. They spend about, it's fairly expensive on European terms, they spend about 60% of what we do per capita on health care and have really good results. But I'll tell you how they do it. They shaft the doctors. In Germany, each region has a budget for each quarter, how much they're going to spend on health care that quarter, and then they allocate that among the doctors who live in that region. And that's all you're going to get. So if a doctor doesn't bill as much as her quota, well, fine, she gets paid, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But if the doctor bills all the way up to her quota by, say, March 15th, she's not going to get paid for the next 2 weeks. And so doctors, you know, if somebody comes in acutely ill, they treat them. I mean, they're doctors. But if you come in with a hurting back or a hangnail or something, they say, could you please wait till April 1st? Because then they're going to get paid again. So it's a system that covers everybody and controls costs, but they shaft the doctors in the process.
You know, it's interesting. It's easy to understand on some political level, twisted though it is, why there isn't more understanding of this coming from Congress. The place where it seems like there should be more understanding of this is from the business community in this country.
Yes, because American business community is at a serious competitive disadvantage. It's not that the other that their competitors in other countries don't pay for health care. In many countries, they do pay for health insurance. In Japan, companies like Toyota and Sony build hospitals and run hospitals for their employees. But the fact is, in those countries, health care is so much cheaper. It's just much cheaper for a Japanese company to keep its employees healthy than it is for an American company to do so. It's a huge competitive disadvantage for our companies. And why they aren't on the barricades demanding change continues to be a mystery to me.
Talk about those costs for a moment, because one of the things you point out in the book is you know, even something as simple as an MRI procedure might cost $1,500 here and less than $100 in Japan.
Yeah, isn't that amazing? An MRI of the neck region cost me $1,434 in Denver, and it would cost, now it would be $105 in Japan because the dollar is a little weaker. How do they do that? Well, here's what happens. In Japan, they have strict cost controls, and they basically said to the diagnostic labs, we're not going to pay $1,400 for that procedure. Get your price down. And so Japanese researchers designed an MRI scan machine that is simpler and much cheaper than the ones that are sold in the United States, so that they could do this scan, the same diagnostic technique, for 1/15 the American price. And they made it work. And guess what, Jeff? Because they were forced to do that, Japan is now exporting these new, cheaper MRI scan machines all over the country. It's been a huge boon for Toshiba and Hitachi, their big scan makers. The point is, cost controls drive innovation. The argument is made in America, particularly by the drug companies, oh my gosh, if you control our costs, we won't be able to do research and innovation. No. In other countries, cost controls drive innovation. The U.S. has great world-class medical research, but so do other countries with much lower cost structures.
T.R. Reid, the book is The Healing of America, A Global Quest for Better, Cheaper, and Fairer Healthcare. It's just published by Penguin. Tom, I thank you so much for spending time with us.
Jeff, you are terrific. It's great to be back on your show.